Good morning, friends. Welcome in hour two of the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, April 6th. Hope you're doing well today and looking forward to the bottom of the hour. I'll have as my guest Jacob Bearer. Jacob, who is a seminarian, who is, by God's grace, maybe a little over a year away from ordination to the priesthood. I guess that means he's going to be ordained, God willing, a transitional deacon coming in. We'll ask him about that at the bottom of the hour. I've had Jacob on before. He has his own blog. He sometimes also writes for Word on Fire, the blog that Bishop Robert Barron has started, as well as for Real Clear Religion. And I want to talk to him specifically about a piece he wrote about the issue of salvation. Actually, the name of the article is What Pope Benedict Really Said About Salvation. And Jacob, I think, who has an interesting take on things most of the time and a great sense of humor. Look forward to having him on at the bottom of the hour. I welcome your calls on our question of the day. And the question is really more of a challenge. It is, how can we craft some sort of compromise position on this whole issue of religious freedom and LGBT rights, the rights of gay and lesbian persons? Because right now it seems like there's a lot of shouting past each other, corporations saying they're going to pull out of states like Mississippi and North Carolina that have recently passed laws designed to protect business owners and other institutions, but particularly business owners who have found themselves on the receiving end of lawsuits when they would not provide certain services oriented around the issue of so-called same-sex marriage, which has now been federalized through the Supreme Court. So, for example, somebody who's wanting to be hired as a florist to provide flowers for a same-sex wedding who refuses out of principle that they do not want to be seen as somehow endorsing same-sex marriage through their participation as a vendor are being sued as discrimination, as discriminatory, much like maybe, a sandwich shop in the Jim Crow era would have refused to serve African-Americans. And so my question is you've got this great clash, and everybody's predicted, or at least a lot of people have, this great clash that has been set up as this move toward the redefinition of marriage and human sexuality has continued to gain momentum, an inevitable clash over this with religious freedom and those who, out of their deep sense of conviction, simply cannot recognize marriage as anything but between a man and a woman. And as I've said before, it's not the first time that people of faith have seen their view of marriage at odds with the state's, particularly we as Catholics who believe in the indissolubility of marriage, and then simply a judge ruling by decree that a couple has divorced does not have any impact on the indissoluble marriage bond that is formed when a valid marriage begins. So what is a reasonable compromise? Because you have the one group that says, look, you're free to believe what you want as long as you keep your belief to yourself and within your own house of worship. When you enter into the corporate world, then you have to set all those beliefs aside because are you a business or are you a religion? And if you're going to be in the business world, you've got to operate like the rest of the business world and, you know, forget your religious convictions. And sometimes there is a caricature made, and I take issue with the New York Times headline that I linked on the question of the day, which they call these anti-gay laws, as if that is the primary purpose. Again, these laws are not sort of carte blanche permission for businesses not to serve gay people. It's that they have the right to not have their particular product violate in the message their product sends a conviction which they find morally incompatible with their faith. So how can we find a compromise while both groups are shouting past each other? And we have a very limited view, I think, sometimes of religious freedom. That's your challenge and the question of the day. How can you come up with a compromise that will satisfy concerns and about both issues, about LGBT rights as ensconced now in the Supreme Court and religious freedom? A couple of other comments we've gotten on Facebook. Leo says, is the nature of your business religious? Follow the religion. Is the nature of your business commercial? Follow the precepts of economy, which should be to make a dollar, not a statement. Of course, you could make a statement while making a dollar and close on your holy days, but you still should serve anyone who bothers to patronize your establishment. It wasn't the lawsuits that got this going. It was the refusal of businesses to serve their kind. I think the issue here is not serving people. As I said, this is not about turning someone away from a product because of who they are. It's refusing to make a product because of what your product would therefore say. I'm not comfortable with this dichotomy between religious business and commercial business, because I think it contradicts the whole notion of religious freedom and religious liberty. Religious liberty, which is not simply the right to worship as one will. You can do that. I mean, that reduced vision of religious freedom you have in North Korea. Worship in your home, in private, believe in your head and in your heart what you want. We're supposed to here believe in religious freedom, and that is the freedom to live out our faith in all its dimensions in the public square. And this division between what is religious and what is commercial, I don't think it's really compatible with the Catholic worldview. So I would probably disagree with that comment from Leo there. And then Randy says, let us re-examine the two sides of this article. Corporations are making demands of officials who were elected by the voting public. This cause is not the issue here for me, but rather who gets to call the shots at the end of the day. Corporate blackmail is replacing the will of the voting public, right? We're seeing a lot of corporations now saying that they won't do business in these states, or they'll pull out of these states because of this legislation. Maybe we are in such a partisan age and people presume the worst about each other that we can't find a place of happy compromise. Maybe that's where we are. I don't know. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, if you've got a comment or a question. Back to the reading for today, or the mass reading. As I've said, during the season of Easter, this 50 days, we, rather than have an Old Testament reading, we have a reading from the book of Acts. A reminder again of that Easter is not simply about looking back in history at something that happened and being inspired by Jesus' death and resurrection. It's, as St. Paul talks about in Romans 6, it's about being buried with Christ in baptism, that just as he was raised to new life, we will be raised to resurrection life and will live it out in the world. And the book of Acts is our window of the earliest apostles and other disciples of Jesus, living out his mission in the world, continuing it on. And as such, as Jesus himself told his disciples, a servant is not above his master. You're going to face opposition. We see that expressed in the gospel reading today, in which John chapter 3, at the end of this discourse and interaction Jesus has with Nicodemus, he says, and this is the verdict, that the light came into the world, but people preferred darkness to light because their works were evil. Everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come toward the light, so that his works might not be exposed. But whoever lives the truth comes to the light so that his works may be clearly seen and done by God. In other words, we see in the book of Acts what Jesus himself predicted, and that is opposition. Not one big ticker tape parade for the apostles, but rather the brutal opposition to the message and the ministry that they continued. Now, in Acts chapter 5, it has a happy ending. Though these apostles are thrown in the public jail because of the jealousy of the high priest and the Sadducees and other religious leaders, they are liberated from the jail by the power of God, an angel of the Lord who opened the doors of the prison and led them out. However, it doesn't always end that way in the book of Acts. In fact, in the book of Acts, the apostle James becomes the first apostle to be martyred Peter was delivered from prison. James, not so much. He was beheaded by Herod. And so, it says it killed him with the sword. Not sure, that may be beheading. But you see this sort of uneven result from the apostles. We see it throughout our history, right? We have some wonderful examples of deliverance. Those who were in danger, we have the story of, was it Leo the Great, who went out to meet with Attila the Hun and talked him out of sacking Rome. But we have other instances in which St. Thomas More languished in prison until his beheading at the hands of Henry VIII. So we need to always be sober and know that God may deliver us at times in this earth and vindicate our cause. And there may be times that in the will of God and the mystery of his providence, he doesn't. The question is do we trust despite? Can we say in the midst of it, if we're suffering for righteousness, and not just suffering for being jerks, because we can suffer for that too, but if we're suffering for standing for truth with love and grace, can we say like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that even if the Lord chooses not in this world to deliver us, we will not bow to your golden statue and to your gods. We will stand for truth. God help us. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show. Minutes past the hour. You're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, April 6th. At the bottom of the hour here in about 15 minutes, I'm going to have my friend Jacob Bear on the program. Jacob, who is a seminarian with the Diocese of Cleveland, and Jacob will be on to talk about what Pope Benedict means by salvation and how we oftentimes misunderstand this. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. If you want to call or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. You may want to weigh in on our question of the day, too, with all the furor going on about these religious freedom laws in Mississippi and North Carolina that have been passed in order to, at least the intention is, to protect persons from having to compromise their values in light of the new marriage laws in this country. And it's creating quite a backlash from corporations, from others who see them steeped in bigotry. And we have this, what seems like this inevitable clash between LGBT rights and religious freedom concerns. What do you think is a reasonable compromise that folks could live with that could satisfy concerns about both? Love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4. 573-4BREAD-4, or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Maybe it's an untenable situation all the way around. We've had a situation like that before, right? We had all these compromises, the Missouri Compromise and so forth, on an issue in which this country was deeply divided. Unfortunately, it led to a really dark chapter in our nation's history, a brutal civil war. I don't think the situation rises to that level at this point, but it does seem like there is a major clash that perhaps, and perhaps the nature is such that each side feels so deeply about their conviction, and to compromise at all would be a betrayal of their cause. Perhaps it's compromise is not, maybe it's not possible. I don't know. Give me a shout. 573-4BREAD-4. 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Wanted to get into it's something that I wasn't able to get to yesterday. There's a website I go to every once in a while. I'm browsing around the internet, and you have a two-hour show. You come up with ideas and topics and so forth, and sometimes I try to read outside of my comfort zone, because I do think we have a tendency in the internet age to gravitate toward websites and news sources and so forth that simply affirm us in what we believe. And I think to have legitimate dialogue, it's important to try to understand how others think, even when they think differently than you. And one of the websites I go to is kind of a mixed bag of things. It's called A Cup of Joe, J-O, because I think it's written by a woman by the name of Joanna Goddard. She writes very much from a modern feminist secular perspective. Some of the stuff I find to be very good. Some of it certainly thought-provoking. Some I disagree tremendously with. And she has, of course, she covers a whole host of different things from style, food, design, travel, relationships, motherhood. But she has a recent column here on under the category of relationships. And it's from this the editor here, Joanna Goddard, an author. She wrote this piece called On Sex and Girls. Girls in quotation mark. Girls were referring to, I guess, the HBO series with Lena Dunham that I have not seen. Talking about a bunch of young modern women who were kind of living out in the world with their own particular value system and so forth. We'll have to get back to that in a minute because we got Shannon giving us a call. Shannon calling in on line one. Shannon, good morning.
Yeah. I just had some just initial thought. So, you know, I haven't really been up long enough to think through this morning.
We won't hold you responsible.
Yeah, don't hold me to everything I say. But I was just thinking, you know, I don't know about compromise. That just seems, it seems to me it's pretty, you know, common sense. But anytime the government gets in, making laws, what you can and can't do, what you can and can't say, who you can and can't, you know, we have more trouble. The more compromises, quote unquote, laws, compromising, you know, the more trouble we're just going to have to keep on compromising. And maybe just people should just say, you know, I don't like the way I want to live. I'm going to go somewhere else and, you know, let the people who do. I want to support, like, for example, this common LGBT couple wants to get married. They go to the cake place. And I'm sorry, we don't make cakes for weddings because we don't support that kind of wedding. You know, okay, you know what? I want to support people who do. So I'm going to put my money. I mean, that's what most common sense people do, you know. I don't know why we have to have the government involved in telling us who we're allowed to go to and who, you know, what you have to do in your business. It just makes more problems.
I'm right there with you, Shannon. I think the problem is, and this was why I think it was very strategic, and I'm not saying that anybody was duplicitous in this, because I think they really believe this, right. But this whole idea, this whole philosophical principle that opposition to homosexual behavior is the same thing as opposition to a person based on their race or gender. Once if you accept that principle, then all you have to do is look at it through that grid and say, okay, well, in this, would we have in the South said, okay, well, if, you know, Clyde over here running his sandwich shop doesn't want to serve black people, as long as there are other sandwich shops around who will, then that's no big deal. I mean, the whole thing that drove the, you know, opposition to Jim Crow laws was that we can't allow that in any form anywhere. So I think that's the mentality that's driving, you know,
trying to change people's minds but through laws.
Because once you have bought that
view of life through a law.
Once you've bought that idea, then you don't have any room for compromise. I mean your cause is righteous and it is it will accept nothing but total victory. So I think that's part of the problem. No matter how well you explain it, no matter how well you say, we're not talking about basic services, we're talking about products that would endorse a particular behavior. So
the aim is really to change people's, to do a social, sweeping social change is really what it is. Because
yes.
You see that when you, like, young people, younger people than even myself, are really creative these days. You know, they'll open up businesses. They're very adventurous that cater to certain services that they can't find anywhere else. And they know there's a niche for it or whatever. You know, it's the same thing, but you're right. I don't think it's about service and business and creating a niche for those. It's about changing people, changing the mind of everybody. And if we're going to have to do it by law. Same thing with the, yeah.
And part of the, you know, and part of the reality is, I don't think for, you know, let's say the issue of, let's say you're a florist, okay? And I don't think from my perspective as a Catholic, I would not say to a Catholic florist that you are required to refuse to provide flowers for a same-sex marriage, because I don't think the church has not given any sort of definitive statement on that. I think it's up to your own particular conscience, and if you can detach, but. What bothers me is saying to someone, if they do feel that prick of conscience, no, you can't follow that. That's what bothers me.
Well, I'm not a bigot or anything, or at least I don't try to ascribe to bigotry, but if you are, so what?
Right.
Make a, you know, hey, there's your opportunity,
If you want to miss out, if you want to miss out on my business,
that I don't agree with.
But again, like I said, we certainly, that was not the mentality with civil rights laws and Jim Crow laws. And I do think it's the same, people equate it. They see the same, it is the same basic idea that we use to rid ourselves of, you know, these, we won't serve blacks here mentality. No Irish need apply. They see it as the same exact thing.
Uh-huh.
That's the problem.
That's the problem with those laws that, you know, we thought were really good laws. And down the road, we seem we might have to actually violate our moral principles for our law.
And the problem, I don't know that the law is the problem. I think the part of the problem is the equating of a behavior with an identity. Because, you know, I think those are two different things. But again, we're in an age in which logic seems to have been set aside.
Up is down, down is up.
Exactly, very much so. And so we've made a behavior into an identity, and that's why I struggle sometimes even with using the word gay, because I think it presumes way too much about, and it identifies someone's own identity, you know, makes someone's own identity
about
their sexual behavior, which I don't think
doesn't
follows.
Have to be that way.
It doesn't have to be that way, right? Well, about out of time for this segment, Shannon. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
All right, no problem. 573-4BREAD-4. Actually, we don't have time. We're about to wrap up this segment. Then we're going to talk to Jacob Bear, my friend, at the bottom of the hour. Pope Benedict, Pope Emeritus Benedict, certainly experienced what it is to be misunderstood, particularly here in a recent interview about the topic of salvation. Jacob will help set us straight when they come back from the break. This is the Mike Allen Show. Past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. That Dennis DeYoung and Styx, they were in concert here just outside of Lexington. I didn't get a chance to go see it. I know some people did, but brings back memories of my sister listening to this stuff in the late 70s. She was a big Styx fan back in the day. You don't think I'd never noticed that Dennis DeYoung's voice sounds about a half an octave below Alvin the Chipmunk. I mean, seriously. I mean, good, but the more I hear that, the more I don't know why I think of that. There's also a Catholic hymn that has that exact same tune. Come live in the light. I keep waiting for us to go there. Anyway, I'm here with my good friend Jacob Bear, who's hearing me drone on here. Jacob is a seminarian with the Diocese of Cleveland, only prospectively a year and change away from priesthood ordination. Believes that authentic joy is a sure sign of God's presence. Hopes to bring as many people as possible to the joy of the gospel through his life and ministry. His article caught my eye. He's been on before, but from the Real Clear Religion website, what Pope Benedict really said about salvation. Live from no longer the mistake by the Lake Cleveland, Jacob.
Hey, good to be back. Thank you for having me on the show again, Mike.
Yeah, happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you.
You're too young to remember Styx, so.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the name as the song was going on there, but I love what you said about that Catholic hymn. Because there's a number of them. There's one that sounds like the Willy Wonka.
Oh, yes. You know, the Lord is my light and my salvation.
I can't remember. What are the words? Gosh, it's not coming to me.
It's the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear?
Yeah.
It's the Willy Wonka song, my kids call it. See, great minds think alike.
There you go. Yeah, we told that to our music director at the seminary, and he no longer plays it. That's all I could think of now.
Yeah. So if you are a year and change away, God willing, from priesthood, that means you must be getting ready to be ordained a transitional deacon.
That's right. You know, bishop and God willing, all those things. October 22nd, I believe that's the feast day of St. Pope John Paul II, will be the prospective ordination date.
Wow.
For diaconate.
And then priesthood next May, maybe, or June?
Next May, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. Wow.
Well, it's happening fast.
Happening fast, and, you know, you're, of course, in seminary there, and I guess, do you work some with Father Damien Ference? Does he work with you some?
Well, he's over at the college program. He does a lot of good things, teaching the guys philosophy and different formational things for the college program. I don't run into him much these days because I'm on the other end of the building with the theology department, but right now I'm at a parish in the Cleveland Diocese. I've been there all the school year, helping out with different things, sort of shadowing the pastor, Father Jim Singler, and learning a lot about the parish, getting some hands-on experience. So it's been very exciting.
Well, like I said, your article in Real Clear Religion caught my attention, and what Pope Benedict really said about salvation. You know, salvation, yeah. I think, don't you think that's one of those words, like a lot of Catholic words, that we throw around and that we don't really contemplate what it means.
Yeah, and then we have a lot of ideas about what it means. And then if the Catholic gets the question, are you saved, from another Christian believer, it's, you know, we can sort of get set on edge as well. Do we say to that? We can get some different ideas.
Don't you think we think about salvation almost exclusively in terms of the end game or, you know, destiny, yeah. Eternal destiny?
Exactly, yeah. And that's sort of where this article came from, was with this Andrew Brown. Pope Benedict, in an interview recently, said, you know, we can't believe that if you're ignorant of the gospel, but you lead a good life, that you have no chance for salvation. And really, Pope Benedict is just echoing what was said at the Second Vatican Council and the Dogmatic Constitution of the Church, that said, if you're striving with all your heart to seek the good, to live the good, according to the grace that God is giving you at that time, surely we believe God is going to be merciful. So, you know, I get nervous when a guy like Andrew Brown with The Guardian says, well, if you're going to get saved anyway, which he jumps to the exact opposite conclusion, if you're just going to get saved anyway, and that's just, I guess, the goal of having a God there is just to get you to heaven. So we use God to get what we want out of him. If we don't need the church anymore to get us to heaven, then what's the point of the church? I mean, he took Benedict's statements to have fought such a conclusion in his article. I had to write something about it. Because Benedict's big thrust throughout his papacy and in his writings is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, encountering Jesus Christ anew in our life, that Christianity is about this loving relationship that we have with God in Jesus Christ. And this is what brings us salvation. So it's really, Benedict has beautiful stuff out there. And then you see that echoed anew in Francis's apostolic letter, The Joy of the Gospel, when he says, I beg you to renew your relationship with Jesus Christ. I mean, it's a Catholic altar call. You know, I mean, this is what Francis, he even uses that line I use in the article from Benedict's Deus Caritas Est, when Benedict says Christianity is not about an ethical choice, but it's about an encounter with Jesus Christ.
Right.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite lines.
Put in those terms, it becomes about fulfilling this relationship with God, and not some legal contract that we have.
I love this line, Jacob, that you have here, speaking about this idea of salvation simply as the idea of getting our ticket punched for eternity. You said, in that universe, Catholicism is nothing more than a book of rules that might get you some bland real estate in purgatory only after a lifetime of remorse as a down payment. Salvation becomes what I do for God and what God therefore owes me in return.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that people, so this article is also written for people in the church who maybe are here because they're afraid of hell, which this is not a ridiculous fear. I mean, we need to fear God, and that's one of the gifts of the Holy Spirit and all that. But we also need to know that we're not just in the church to get that ticket punched, and we don't just follow the rules because otherwise we make God mad. Like, the rules, the laws of the church are actually there to help us become free from what binds us. The rules that the church has there, its teachings about morality, sexuality, they're not there to imprison us or to chain us down, but rather to heal our hearts, to liberate our hearts. And I think there's a lot of people in the church that need to hear that as well, faithful people who are really trying to do what's asked of them, but are losing perhaps the joy of the gospel because it's just a book of rules that they're following. And they don't see the heart that's beating and giving those rules life.
I'm here with Jacob Baer, who's a seminarian from the Diocese of Cleveland, and talking about his article from the Real Clear Religion website, what Pope Benedict really said about salvation. I'm reminded in hearing you talk of, I think it was G.K. Chesterton said that the walls of Christianity are the walls of a playground. I mean, they're meant to protect us, but also to give us room to find our truest self and the what joy is in truth.
I believe that's exactly right. I mean, it's a whole new understanding of, you know, the moral code, the, you know, living a moral life. It's really about joy, you know, it's really about fulfillment. Now, is it always going to be easy? Well, definitely not. But will it lead to a richer life? Certainly it will. And we believe in that. And I think that's part of the salvation where I remember Dr. Scott Hahn talking about salvation at one point, and he says, we believe we've been saved, we're being saved, and we're going to be saved. You know, salvation is never a one-and-done sort of deal. It's a continual covenant relationship that we have with God. And part of those covenants is always a new law. And so Christians, we've been given Jesus Christ as our way. And it's what a beautiful way it is that we've been handed through Jesus Christ. And so salvation starts now,
right?
Not just when we get to heaven. Salvation begins today.
And I think it has implications for evangelization, too, because if we believe, look, you can be saved without being a Catholic, so why should we even share the faith? Well, we share the faith because of the richness of life in Jesus Christ and in the church he founded.
Exactly. All that reminds me, you know, I was just doing some reading from Romans, and right at the beginning, I was thinking about our conversation, because St. Paul was talking about, well, if the Gentiles could be saved apart from the Mosaic law, then what about us Jews? Is it even worth being a Jew now? And so it's so funny, like, we are still wrestling with these questions about God's covenants and who is saved and how are people brought in. We're still talking about these same things 2,000 years after the fact. It's really wonderful.
we're not always the sharpest knives in the drawer, but God loves us anyway. Jacob, we're about out of time. I'm going to post this article on the show's Facebook page. It's excellent. Keep up the great work, and let's talk again soon, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Happy Easter, Jacob.
Happy Easter.
All right. We'll be back in just a minute. We'll spin the Dollar Catechism wheel. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Shop in Chicago on a sunny summer day. A couple gazes at the wedding rings, their own display.
She smiles and nods her head as he says, honey, that's for you. It's not much, but it's the best that I can do.
Golden rain, with one tiny little stone. Just a cold metallic thing. Only love can make a golden wedding ring.
15 minutes before the hour. It's a classic country kind of day, I guess. Celebrating Merle Haggard's birthday earlier. And on this day back in 1998, Tammy Wynette passed from this earth. Complications associated, I believe, with... escaping me. But she and George Jones... Now, hepatitis, I believe. Now, she and George Jones, who did that little duet, which was a song interestingly reflective of their own off-and-on relationship, Golden Rings. Anyway, Tammy Wynette died on this day, 1998. Of course, George Jones now passed away, too. As I say, as George Jones said, who's going to fill their shoes? 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to chime in. Great conversation with Jacob Bear. I think one of the things I appreciate so much about Jacob, he has a great sense of humor. He, God willing, will really be an excellent priest, and need to pray for him and all those who are discerning a vocation to priesthood, and that they will discern God's will and that they will give God their yes as we all continue to give our yeses over the course of our lifetime. Anyway, back to this story I came across on the website, A Cup of Joe, from Joanna Goddard, who writes from a sort of a secular feminist perspective. And she's talking about the HBO series called Girls, which you may have heard about. I think it's a little bit, maybe a little bit more of a raucous Sex in the City about young women who are trying to kind of make their way in the world and figure things out. And Joanna Goddard says, do you watch Girls? It's such a fun show. And I love the clever wardrobes and talking alarm clocks and that lanky, slow-talking Adam Driver. But there's one thing that drives me completely bats. If I have to watch one more scene where someone has unprotected sex, even with a complete stranger, even in a graveyard without blinking an eye, my head is going to explode into 1,000 tiny pieces. They don't even feel stressed later or freak out and get tested or have any sort of awareness of it at all. It just happens. It's a non-event. And here's the thing, she writes. If TV and movie characters move seamlessly from kissing to sex, then people may hesitate to use condoms in real life because then it may feel awkward and prudish to bring it up. Go find one, take off the wrapper. And I know Girls is just a show, but you absorb and normalize everything around you. It's human nature. In other words, Joanna Goddard has a moral issue with the show Girls, but not for the reason that perhaps I would have an issue morally with the show Girls. It's the fact that they are modeling so-called, what she says, unprotected sex. She goes on to quote from an article called Why James Bond Needs to Use Condoms. And basically the idea that we need to normalize safety and protection when it comes to sex. In my view, this is an adventure of missing the point, because I want to take issue even with this term, protected sex. Because it occurs to me that that term in and of itself is an oxymoron. You know, an oxymoron, two words that are thrown together but that are really incompatible, that contradict each other. You know, you've heard examples of oxymorons. Jumbo shrimp, for example. military intelligence. That's a joke for my veterans out there. United Methodist. I was a United Methodist, and we weren't very united most of the time, to be honest. Protected sex. Here's where I think we see a complete misunderstanding of what sex even means. Because if we truly understand, and this is, I think, one of the things that the late St. John Paul II has really helped us understand, of what the language of sex is. And when I say sex, of course, we can say it in terms of gender, male and female, but also we mean sexual union. It is, in the Catholic understanding, and I think rooted in even to something wired within us, there is a marital language to sex. In other words, what is it that we say through our bodies in the sexual act? We say something profoundly marital. This is why the sexual union is the consummating act of marriage. It's what completes, sums up, and perfects the promises that are made at the altar by the couple, in which they've promised to give their whole selves, to make a partnership of the whole of life. They've made vows to give themselves without reservation and without reserve to each other at the altar. Then they go and complete that, embody those promises through the two becoming one flesh. In other words, the language of sex is marital. This is why so many times it's such a reduction to say things like, well, the Catholic Church has a rule that you shouldn't have sex before you're married. Well, if that's what the teaching is, if it's simply a rule that feels somewhat arbitrary and antiquated, then of course we will jettison that at our first opportunity. But if we understand that all we're simply saying is not about sexual morality, but sexual honesty, speaking the truth with our bodies, and believe me, listen, we're all have so much brokenness on this, and we've drunk in so many distortions. It's like a fish doesn't know it's wet. We're all impacted by this complete divorce we have in our culture between the language of the sexual union as a marital gift and simply the exchange of pleasure between those who consent. That's kind of the competing visions that are out there. But if it is, in fact, the consummating act, if it is what speaks a profound word of unity and self-gift, in giving you my body, I'm giving you my whole self because my body contains my person, and in our unity, in becoming one flesh, we are joining our whole lives together, then how can sex, properly understood, ever be protected? If it's protected, then it's really not sex. It's an exchange of pleasure. It may be even an exchange of some degree of intimacy. But if it is in fact protected, if we're holding some part back from ourselves, if we feel the need to be protected from our partner, I mean, it is not sex. It is not this gift that is embodied in the two becoming one flesh. It is, has become a contradiction of its very self. So that would be my issue with Joanna Goddard. Certainly, if casual sex is a part of the, well, that may be an oxymoron too. Sex can never be casual. Not properly understood. It is a profound mystery of self-giving, right? So the idea that we can have protected sex is in itself an oxymoron. Anyway, that's my contention. If you've got a thought on that, 573-4BREAD-4, you can chime in. 573-4BREAD-4, you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. I want to be able to make sure we spin the dollar catechism wheel, go to random, go to random.org, our random number generator. I loved talking to Jason yesterday, Jason Hall. He was saying that he and his fiance have played this game before, dollar catechism. It's pretty simple. Go to random.org, a random number generator. Enter in a minimum as one, the maximum is 2865. That's the total number of paragraphs in this repository of all things Catholic. And just dial one up at random and see what it says. 948. And what you'll find, of course, is that truth is always integrated. It's never random. It's like a great Jenga tower within the panoramic beauty of the faith. So 948, if I can find it, let's see, 948. We're in the profession of faith, the first pillar of the four sections, really. The first pillar is on the faith, what we affirm as what we believe. So 948, the term communion of saints, therefore, has two closely linked meanings. Communion in holy things and among holy persons. Then we have a quote here that says this: God's holy gifts for God's holy people, Sancta Sanctus in the Latin, is proclaimed by the celebrant in most Eastern liturgies during the elevation of the holy gifts before the distribution of communion. The faithful, that's the holy persons, the sancti, are fed by Christ's holy body and blood, that's the sancta, the holy things, to grow in the communion of the Holy Spirit and to communicate it to the world. So interestingly, it's not just about a communion of persons, which we certainly affirm as Catholics, because he is God of the living, not God of the dead, and therefore our communion with those who have died in friendship with God is not broken by death, but continues on. But we can experience that communion through holy things, and particularly the most holy of things, the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, in that meal which embodies our perfect unity. The communion of saints. Here's the thing. I believed in the communion of saints as a Protestant Christian. As a Catholic, I discovered it was even better than I imagined, deeper and richer. Not a contradiction of, but a consummation of. Be back with you tomorrow by God's grace. You've been listening to The Mike Allen Show.